W-T-E-N-E-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Friday. It's been a busy old week for Norwich City. Plenty of stuff to get stuck into over the course of the next hour or so. Of course, two new signings through the door. One of those last night, one the day before. We've had the fixtures being released. We've had the cup draw. We've had Liam and his coaching staff, backroom team, seemingly closer to completion. And then all the rumours on top. So we'll get into all of those in the next hour or so. Adam Harvey joined by Connor Southwell and Samuel Seaman. Of course, we want your comments, your questions, your interactions. Get them down below and we'll work through those as we move through the show. Let's just start with a little bit, I suppose, of the confirmations this week. Let's talk about fixtures first. Sam, you done a little bit yesterday on our show, lunchtime, talking around those. I suppose any more reaction or feeling having looked at that list over the sort of last 24 hours or so?
Yeah, I think ultimately, unfortunately, I'm usually in that camp of saying that fixtures don't really amount to much. And obviously, you know who you're going to play going into it anyway. But I think the one thing I'd say is that at the start, they've avoided some of those ones that you'd say will definitely be tricky. I mean, it's probably too early to say at this stage which championship teams will be where in the table. But definitely, you would have said an East Anglian derby in the first few games would have been quite tricky for Liam Manning trying to sort of impress his new public for the first time. And any of those relegated clubs really would have been quite tricky when you look even at their squads, despite sort of the struggles that obviously they had last season and the turmoil that they have been in, particularly looking at Leicester and how things have unfolded there. So, yeah, I think to avoid those relegated clubs, to probably also avoid the promoted clubs in the first couple of games as well, when you consider how much talk there is about them and how much momentum it feels like there is, particularly behind Birmingham and Wrexham. So I think, yeah, it could definitely have been worse. Ultimately, we'll probably only really find out how fortunate Norwich were with the fixture list when the games actually happen. But I think for now, probably Liam Manning and his squad have swerved some of the more problematic ones at the start. And ultimately, mainly, I think it will just be nice for them to have a few dates in the diary and have something to really aim for on the first day of the season.
Yep. And we also had the excitement and thrill of the Carabao Cup draw yesterday afternoon. Connor, I mean, how are you reacting to the brilliant news that we've got a trip to Watford?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky I'm here, really. I've been just so shocked and so excited for it. I've barely been able to contain myself, as I'm sure a lot of people have. I mean, what a draw that is. I always say my kind of two rules for a cup draw are either anyone at home. I think if you get anyone at home, that's a good draw. Or I always go by the rule of someone semi-interesting away, ideally a place we don't usually get to go to ordinarily. So Watford away does neither of those in my box. It's about as bad a draw as you could get, really. A fellow championship team, not really got the sense that any team will be majorly fussed if they go out on that night, and it will be an opportunity to rotate. So, it's you just sort of shrug your shoulders and move on, don't you, with that one. Unfortunately, it's yeah, not a new ground, not a particularly interesting opponent. And, you know, who knows, maybe an opportunity to get to see some new additions or some younger faces. That tends to be what those opportunities are for. It's not too far. So, I mean, given Exeter and Plymouth, I think, were still in the hat when Norwich were drawn out, we'll take it. It could have been a lot worse. But yeah, fixtures wise, and I just pick up on the point that Sam's made, it is difficult. And I know people always kind of laugh a little bit when there's an attempt to try and analyze a fixture list. And I agree to an extent. I think what I would say is it does, and Sam's right, it does look like a pretty well balanced list. There's not a particularly, you know, there were a couple of spells last year you looked at it and you thought, whoa, that's a tough run that they've got there. I think January with five away games is pretty tough. Oh, other than that, it feels quite well balanced. I think there's a double header of Leicester and Southampton away, I think in February, March, if I've got that right. Obviously, Ipswich in October, that's the first time they played any of the newly relegated teams. There's Wrexham at home in that run as well. So, yeah, it feels like they've probably navigated any really challenging run. I think the run-in looks okay if they're in a position where they can push. That feels okay, but yeah, who knows? This is the Championship. Millwall could be the best team in the league. It could be the toughest start. I think it's probably unlikely, but it's possible. So yeah, not the most thrilling cup draw. But yeah, I think we'll see how it goes. Thankfully, they don't have any extra time. But if you want a good omen, and I looked this up yesterday, Norwich and Watford have played each other three times in this competition. One of them was a two-legged affair in the 90s. Norwich City unbeaten. They've won all of those ties. So maybe that's a good omen. And the second round will provide something much more thrilling. I doubt it.
I doubt it indeed. We'll park that till August when that wraps around. Let's talk transfers, what people are here to talk about. Let's talk first about the man or a couple of men that have arrived this week. Let's talk Yakov Medic first. There he is. Big old neck on him, as I think a few people have pointed out on social media. Certainly wouldn't want to mess with him, I don't think. Sam, what do you make of that addition? You know, clearly we spoke around him a lot last week and we've had time to digest this over the course of the week before that announcement was officially confirmed. What, Thursday or Wednesday, sorry, now the week has kind of been a bit of a blend of busyness. Yeah, what do you make of that addition for Norwich?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting one. I think you look at the fact that, first of all, Ajax obviously made the decision to sign him a couple of years ago. And it's probably a similar theme with Vladan Kovacevic. Although I'm sure my pronunciation will get better on that one before long, in terms of the fact that they've probably seen him hit a higher peak than he's at previously in his career. Connor wrote a really good piece that I'd recommend anyone go and read about that sort of theme. And obviously we'll come on to Kovacevic. But yeah, I think there is that feeling that he's someone who does have serious talent. Norwich have obviously watched him previously, and I think if you ask anyone who watched him particularly in Germany and the feeling there is around him there, he's somebody who they feel could do really, really well in the Championship. Obviously the fact that it didn't work out really for him at all at Ajax, he spent last season on loan with Bochum, who were relegated from the Bundesliga, means that he doesn't come to Norwich with a huge sense of momentum. But I think that's where having a coach like Liam Manning is probably really helpful, because he's so well known for improving players and he talks quite often about the fact that that is the prime objective for him as a coach. So I think it's probably a situation where they've seen someone they can get for what will be a really good price if he hits the levels that they think he can. 1.8 million initially, rising to potentially 2.5 million. And even if they end up paying all of those add-ons, a player at prime age who only a couple of years ago was deemed good enough to be signed by Ajax, I think that looks like a pretty good price. And when you consider what Norwich were looking for this summer, that those prime players to sort of address the balance of the age in the squad, a bit of physicality in defence, and ultimately just higher quality in defence when you look at how many goals they conceded, I think they've ticked a lot of boxes that they wanted to tick with him. Of course, he'll pass the sort of GBE regulations as well, so they don't need to use up one of those slots. And I think when you add it all up, it's a signing that's probably relatively low risk, but the reward is potentially really, really high. And I do actually like that idea of maybe trying to spot players who aren't necessarily on the way up right now, but where you've seen much higher peaks and they can make much more of them, which obviously was the case for almost every single player in that 2018-19 squad that went on to win the league in fantastic fashion. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of positive signs. If you look at his numbers, my main concern would maybe be his progression on the ball and how good he is at passing the ball forward. But I think they've got players who can do that alongside him. I think Harry Darling is very good at that. Jose Cordoba has proved previously, probably when he's at his best, that he can pass the ball out from the back pretty well. So I think if he's paired with somebody who has those strengths, then that could be almost the perfect pairing. And as I said, when you look at what they've paid for him, it's the sort of deal that you don't really lose too much from. So overall, yeah, I think it's a pretty positive one. Although ultimately, he's obviously never played in England before. He's never played in the Championship. So we'll probably have to wait and see what his level's like once he gets into that situation. But yeah, overall, it definitely gets a thumbs up from me.
Yes, let's talk about the other addition, Connor, the goalkeeper confirmation last night. It was a name that Paddy threw in the hat quite a few weeks back now, you know, and it's kind of developed to the point where he now becomes a Norwich City player. I saw a comment as well, I think maybe asking around him from Jack, saying Sporting fans saying we've been scammed, paying $2 million for Vlad. Portuguese league isn't any better than the Championship besides the big three. Any concerns on the level of this guy? I mean, what do you make of him as an addition and you know, that important position of number one goalkeeper?
Yeah, firstly, I mean, we're not ones to blow our own trumpet, really. But yeah, I mean, it is a name that we mentioned, I think, in a newsletter, which shows the value of going and signing up to that, pinking.com, to go and find out more, for a shameless plug there. Yeah, I think I would say to that, and probably with Medic as well, I think we have to put in context what a bad season looks like for both of those guys. So for Kovacevic, I'm going to go with Sam, and if that's not right, then he can correct us at a later date. You know, what was a bad season for him? It was playing 10 times for Sporting Lisbon. It was going on loan to Legia Warsaw. It was playing in the Europa Conference League against Chelsea and winning, and various other teams as well, winning a Polish Cup. I think by most people, you know, for most players, some players, that would constitute a good season. I recognise there was some fluctuating performance in there as well. But you know, let's have it right. A bad season doesn't make you a bad footballer, and that doesn't mean that he's a bad footballer. It doesn't mean he's a good one either. Obviously, he's got to come and prove that now in the Championship. But you look at what he's done across his career in Bosnia, in Poland with Rakow as well. There is really solid evidence there that he is, you know, a really good performer. And you know, with Medic, I wouldn't say that relegation makes him a bad footballer. You look at someone like Liam Delap, for example. I think most people would agree that there is a very talented footballer. Chelsea have just signed him. There was a player that got relegated. That's a very extreme example on the other end of the spectrum, but it doesn't mean that, you know, it is a player that is a bad one. I think if you go and watch the chat I did with Dan O'Hagan, who gives some really good insight into the year he had at Borkum, where, you know, the coach changed and Dieter Hecking was appointed and they went to perhaps a more pragmatic style of play. There's always context to wrap around this. Sporting is, you know, they have a lot of, well, actually, if you look at their sort of recruitment over the last 3-4 years, they haven't got a lot wrong. It's why their managers ended up at Manchester United. It's why a lot of their players go on to some massive European clubs. You look at, you know, Victor Guy Koresh, a guy that obviously we know well in the Championship. They don't have a lot of misses. The fact that Kovacevic has been is probably more of a reflection of his experience rather than his quality, I would argue, because, you know, he got in the team, he had an injury, came back. There were a couple of poor games, which again, weren't necessarily all his fault. And again, if these two players, I think we can pull them together, if they have really good campaigns, if Medic kicks on at Ajax, if Kovacevic kicks on at Sporting, they don't become Norwich City players. That's the reality of it. They would be playing for those two clubs and, you know, be looking upwards rather than where they are. So, of course, there is an element of timing about this, and that's recruitment in a nutshell. Norwich watched so many players. You know, Lee Dunn spoke about this in his chat with Paddy earlier in the year. They have, you know, I think it's a massive vault. They have a massive vault full of players that they're constantly updating and files that they're constantly keeping tabs off. And then it's about finding targets that, in that context, in that moment, both for Norwich City and in their respective careers, you know, all of that aligns where they're in a position to sign them. That's a lot of stages that need to marry up. These two players are obviously in that context. I think what I'd say about Kovacevic, I think he feels to me more of a risk than than Medic, but purely because of how significant that position is from a Norwich City perspective. He's walking into big shoes, and I think the pressure on him is going to be immense. It's a good fee that Norwich City have paid for him, I think, given his reputation, given what he's achieved, his calibre, his numbers, the amount of games he's played at 27, to have played over 250 at that age, to have won, what was it, 11 trophies or whatever it was he shouted about. That's not a bad pedigree to be walking in, but of course it means nothing as soon as you walk into the Championship, and we know what that league is like. I think he's going to give some people some real heart-in-mouth moments having watched him. He's super aggressive in terms of his positioning. I think there's a really good presence about him in terms of the way he commands his area. That was maybe one of my criticisms of Angus Gunn at points. I didn't think he was as commanding as maybe he could have been for his height, but obviously still very, very good for the level. And ultimately, that is the way that he's going to get judged, Kovacevic. Is he better than Angus Gunn? And if he's not, that won't be deemed as a success, because you've already let go a goalkeeper who was of a calibre, irrespective of a poor season last season, who had proven his levels in the Championship. So it feels like there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders. He feels to me, having watched his club interview, like the sort of person that's going to relish that and someone who's not going to be fazed by that. He didn't strike me as a character who's going to be too worried about the environment that he's playing in terms of the experience and leadership that he offers. So yeah, I think with both of these signings, they're risky to an extent. But Norwich have balanced that off by signing players who aren't as risky. They have, for example, in my view, lifted the quality of their second choice goalkeeper. That is now still a gap, because it's always going to be at Championship level, but I don't think it's as big a chasm as it was last season. The balance in terms of centre-backs as well, Harry Darling, there is somebody who's proven, who's ready at Championship level to be plugged in. Medic's risk then is married off with that. You've got Cordoba in the background. You've got, obviously, Shane Duffy is still at the club. McConville as well. There's a mix there. So they're risks, absolutely, but I think they're high rewards as well if Norwich City can get them right. And probably financially, they're at a level where they are risks that aren't going to be too costly. We're not talking about £6-8 million players where, you know, if it goes wrong, then it's a disaster. I don't think that's the case. So yeah, two really interesting additions. I'm quite excited to watch both of them. I mean, Medic looks like he's been, you know, chiseled out of granite, doesn't he, with his frame. There's some big players they're signing now. Kovacevic, 6'3", 6'4". Medic, 6'3", 6'4". Darling's a big guy as well. They're going to be pretty imposing. So, yeah, I think it's really interesting. But what's good for me is they've recognised probably you need a bit more, or a bit of a different age profile in those core positions, goalkeeper, centre-back in the Championship. And I'm really looking forward to see how that sort of all comes together, because I think it has the prospect to be quite exciting. But obviously it's going to be up to Tony Roberts in Kovacevic's case, Liam Manning in his coaching team's case, to pull that all together and make it a cohesive defensive unit, one that obviously is better than last season. So that's going to be really exciting to watch, I think.
Yes, before we talk maybe more transfer rumours and what people are here to talk around, obviously there's a few comments from people asking for updates on the backroom staff of Liam Manning. Ben saying, any update on the staff from Bristol? And I think I saw, yeah, Kieran here saying, are we any closer to Hodcrouse and Gary appointments? I know you've sort of been doing a few pieces on this week, Sam. So can you sort of give the people a bit more of an update on where we are with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely close. Obviously, Hogg and Kraus are people they've been looking at for a long while, and there was a breakthrough. I think Connor's story was a few days ago, and it felt from that point that it was inevitable. They've been in the building at Colney. That's likely to be, well, it's to be honest, it's virtually completed, and it's just a waiting announcement. I think Gary is probably a little bit further behind. He's one who developed a little bit later on, and obviously will mean an expanded coaching group. But he also has flown over from Lommel in Belgium, where he's obviously currently working as an assistant, and that's another one that's basically expected to be a formality. So yeah, it to all intents and purposes, Norwich have got the coaching staff that they want going into the 2025-26 season. I think it's just a case now of, as it was with Medic and Kovacevic for a few days, a case of finalising things, dotting I's, crossing T's, and doing some paperwork before that announcement comes. Because yeah, to all intents and purposes, that deal is done, and I'd expect those three to be confirmed as part of Liam Manning's coaching staff before long.
Yes, let's talk, I suppose, around a few players that have maybe been linked away from Norwich City this summer. Quite a few of them in sort of those attacking areas. I think Borja Sainz is maybe the one that's had the most tangible interest. We've seen, you know, a couple of bids on the table as well, you know, Napoli and Porto. That was sort of prior to the Club World Cup. Porto have been eliminated from that. I suppose, given that their window reopens pretty soon, Connor, are they sort of another club you could see coming to the table pretty quickly?
Yeah, Paddy's put a piece on Pinker.com that people can go and read for the latest on this. But yeah, we're expecting this, I think, to move pretty quickly, possibly as early as over the weekend, in terms of developments on him. Porto, currently the front runner in that, and have been. They were, I think, very close to where Norwich City see his valuation, which ballpark might end up being sort of either side of this, but ballpark wise you can sort of put in the same place as where they got to on John Rowe, which I think was 14 million plus add-ons, and that would have taken it to 17, I think. So I could see a similar sort of structured deal there. Clearly there are other teams. I think Napoli's interest there with the other team that launched a bid, that seems to have cooled a little bit. Bilbao still haven't come to the table. I know there's been a lot of Spanish reports about that being contingent on Nico Williams, who and I was told that they're pretty close friends, actually, Borja and Nico Williams, having, I think, come through the ranks together at Bilbao. I don't think that's been done yet, has it, him to Barcelona? So, again, I think there is a risk here that Bilbao leave it a little bit too long and he goes elsewhere. But who knows? You never know when, if that progresses, Bilbao might then come to the table, contrary to, I think, a lot of stuff that I've seen on social media. No firm proposal from Nottingham Forest at all. I wouldn't totally dismiss someone left field appearing. And I think that's been the case. I think we've long reported there's been interest in lots of different places. Obviously, Italy, Portugal, Spain are the three that we've spoken about. There's some in England as well. Greece has been mentioned. Turkey has been mentioned. Wouldn't surprise me if any of those came to the table with something that was acceptable in the next few days. But yeah, it certainly does feel like Porto are heading the queue at the moment. And I think, to be honest, that would be a phenomenal move if he could get there. You look at someone like, we mentioned him, Guy Koresh, who was at Coventry, now at Sporting. He's being linked with some big money moves now in England because of off the back of what he's done, not just in the Portuguese division, whatever, irrespective maybe of the quality that we think about it in, but more pressingly in Europe. And, you know, it can be a real gateway. And I think Portuguese clubs equally are now seeing the Championship as a really viable market. And, you know, that would be a really good step up for him. I think he'd probably go, I can't speak for all Norwich fans, but I think the majority of them, clearly, whilst disappointed that he was going to go, I think would accept that that is a phenomenal move for a player who has had a really good season and a really good half a season. So, I would agree with what Kieran said there. I'm not quite sure he is physically where he needs to be for the Premier League, technically, and obviously an outstanding goal scorer and good goal scorers as well. I actually think, as well, Johannes Hoftorp deserves some credit for the way he unlocked him in the first part of the season. Again, I know it tailed off, but Sainz was maybe the major benefactor of his system and being found the ball in higher positions. And you look at the goals that he scored, and there's some really good analysis from the guys. I think it was Not the Top 20 pod at the time, around his kind of shooting positions and how closer he was to the penalty area. That was as a result of the system. Obviously, it tailed off towards the end, and with 12 months left, I think Norwich will have done very well to get that fee for him, as they did with John Rowe. So that's one aspect. Then clearly the other side of that is the incoming wise wingers. I'll maybe leave that because I think you might want to come back onto it, but that clearly will then take precedence from there. So yeah, Science was in the building yesterday for testing. But yeah, clearly, I think July the 1st, isn't it, the Portuguese window's reopened, and obviously Porto now out of the Club World Cup. I think things took a little bit of a backseat whilst they were in that competition, and probably rightly so. We'd probably expect it to heat up again. So yeah, maybe one to watch as the weekend progresses, amongst trying not to get sunstroke or whatever the obscene temperatures are going to be this weekend.
Yes, indeed. The other man, I suppose, who inevitably there'll be interest in this summer, yet to sort of anyone to come to the table with a bid, is Josh Sargent. We saw him arrive for pre-season testing as well yesterday through some images from the club. I think Udinese have been linked. Roma, we've known that, you know, there's been reports of interest. I think there was a report yesterday from somewhere in Italy, you know, linking maybe Florentina and then maybe coming to the table with a bid at some point. What's kind of his situation, the latest on him at the moment, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, those reports are probably the thing that's drawn people's attention at this stage. I mean, from what we're told, there still hasn't been that official bid that it said in that report was expected in the next 24 hours. But definitely the noises we've heard for a long while now are that the interest has been there. It's been tangible. I think just because Ben Napper hasn't received an email with a specific amount of money on it and some terms of a transfer doesn't mean that he hasn't been speaking to a lot of people about Josh Sargent. It doesn't mean that there aren't clubs considering taking him away from Carrow Road. And it does certainly feel like those conversations maybe are hotting up a little bit. I think it's still quite far from the Borja Sainz situation where they're completely planning for life without him and are so certain that he'd leave that they would probably even sanction the arrivals of other wingers before he had departed. I think with Sargent, they're probably more likely to wait until that deal moves much closer to a conclusion. So I'd expect it, if he does go, to drag on a little bit longer. But yeah, I think it definitely does feel a bit more like that interest might become something more tangible soon. I think the fees from Norwich are probably less daunting than maybe they would have been last summer. Obviously, we know that there was that discussion with Cincinnati, and Sargent agreed that deal with them from a sort of club to player basis. And Norwich actually rejected an offer of £20 million. I don't know if the position has really changed too much from there. Of course, there's a bit of wiggle room in terms of add-ons and things like that, but I wouldn't expect Norwich to hold out until somebody comes to the table with sort of 30 million or anything crazy like that. I think numbers wise, probably Norwich are relatively realistic about what it will take to prize away somebody who hasn't really achieved too much at a higher level than the Championship. Of course, has had those injury struggles in the last few seasons as well. So I don't know if the number that it would take to sign him is as mind-blowing as a lot of people are hoping for. And that's probably what's attracting a little bit more of that interest right now, but it's certainly not at science levels of bids getting close or negotiations expected to make huge steps over sort of the next few days. But from those reports about what's going on in Italy with Fiorentina, as you mentioned, Adam, it does sound like probably that tangible interest will come before long. And yeah, it's definitely a situation to watch with Josh Sargent. Of course, we know that Norwich have looked at those options. It's a bit like that vault that Connor referenced in terms of the number of names that they'll have. And of course, right now they'll be having those sort of exploratory discussions. They haven't made any tangible bids for any potential Sargent replacements, but we know that they have a list of names. They have several players whose situations they're tracking this summer. And although they won't move on anyone until the situation with Sargent is really advanced, they definitely have players who they'll be ready to turn to and they'll be ready to go, because although they've got Ante Cianats, I think they're well aware that losing somebody who scored 15 goals for them last season, contributed way more than just what he did in front of goal as well, would take some replacing. So, I think it's an interesting situation and one that probably will have a few more twists and turns over the next few weeks, but not a sort of an imminent one where we'd expect major change over the coming days as maybe we would with Sainz.
Yes, Faith saying people are saying 15 million. I suppose what do you make of a fee that would be demanded by Norwich to get him out of the club this summer, Connor? Because, you know, I think maybe fans will have a certain valuation, but, you know, he's got over 3 years left on his contract at the moment as well. So he's, I suppose Norwich hold the power, really, don't they?
Yes, they do. They do. I guess it depends on their position, doesn't it? I mean, if ultimately the market dictates what he's worth, because it will be the bids that come in that dictate what he's worth. For example, I think before this summer, if you'd have said to me Norwich were getting around the John Rowe money for Borja Sainz, I think I'd have said they've done really well to get that fee. But because of the interest, because of the level and significant clubs that have come in at the level they've come in, they've been able to push that probably a little bit higher than maybe what we expected. Josh Sargent, if there is less of that and there is one, two clubs maybe who do eventually take that step into converting interest into offers, and he wants to explore that, then of course there is a will to kind of respect that. And, you know, Sam mapped it out quite nicely there. I think we're talking about a player who has done exceptionally well at Championship level. What was it, 44 goals in 98 games or something? It's pretty much one in two, not quite, but pretty much. And, you know, that level of goal scoring is going to attract interest. But equally, you look at the injuries that he's had. He's been out of significant portions of Norwich City's last two Championship seasons. I think before he came back this season, across the last couple of years before that, he'd played 40 and missed 40. And they're injuries that have been significant in their nature, and they've been varying across his body as well. So you know, I think there probably is going to have to be a degree of realism around the type of and level of fee that Norwich City may be able to command. I mean, that Joe Bellingham one, for example, I just don't see how it's going to get anywhere near that. You take someone like Gabriel Sara and look at the level that he went for last summer. Would it surprise me if Josh Sargent ended up being in and around that fee? No, probably not really. And look, clearly there are other ways to structure that deal to make it more profitable to Norwich. So I think it is going to be really interesting to see if the level of interest gets to a point where Norwich City can push that up a little bit and push that maybe further into the 20s. I do think it will start with a two, probably the overall package. How far into that, I'm not quite sure at this stage. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Certainly the Italian clubs we wouldn't associate with kind of Premier League level fees generally. That's not to say that that's not the case. And I think some of the reports around Udinese have been around 15. I think it would be tough to do it at that price. I think it would have to be a bit closer to 20. But, you know, do I think Norwich are going to get north of 25 million? I think that's Cloud Cuckoo Land, really. I think there is going to be a degree of realism, and equally of where Norwich City are as well. They're a mid-table championship side now. That's the reality. And so that still represents probably a very, very good fee for one of their players. So yeah, it's difficult and it's frustrating. And you know, you've got a player there who is so good at the level and makes such a big impact. But again, if from Norwich's perspective, you could get a more consistent striker who maybe scores at a slightly lower rate, but can do that over 46 games as opposed to 30. Do you take that risk? Do you cash those chips in? I feel it would be a big risk personally, but I could kind of see the logic for doing it. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to see evolve. I think, like Sam, I could see it going probably later into the window than science, obviously, that the position Norwich are in a better position with that. So yeah, we'll see, but I think it's going to be very much watched this space with Josh Sargent, but I don't think those figures are beyond the realms. Probably 15 is a bit low, but I don't think it's you know, a million miles away from perhaps where it'll end up.
Yeah, another player that's been linked away in the last week or so is Emi Marcondes, who of course arrived on a free, September, October time last year after the window had closed, and made that instant impact, maybe a bit like some of the other players in the group. You know, his form tailed off a little bit in the second half of the campaign. There was the report maybe linking him to Grêmio over in Brazil. His mum is obviously native from Brazil. Kieran saying, also, any chance of Marcondes going to Brazil? Safe to say that murmur caught me off guard when it came up. There were some quotes as well from his agent. What do you make of all that, and maybe the links away, Sam?
Yeah, I think it's probably quite realistic that he does go, to be honest, when you look at all of the elements involved. Obviously, from the quotes from his agent, it sounds like he's very open to a move to Brazil, and I don't think you can really begrudge him that at this stage of his career. I think Norwich are probably fairly open to him leaving. Obviously, the advantage that they get from having extended his contract towards the back end of last season is that they probably could get some sort of fee or some sort of profitable deal out of it. I don't think it would be hugely transformative numbers for their transfer window, but it's certainly better than what they would have had if they released him on a free in the summer. Obviously, you look at the relationship with Johannes Toorup, how key Toorup was in bringing him to the club in the first place, and the fact that now Liam Manning is coming in wanting to put his own stamp on things, wanting to sort of get his own people in there. And although I actually think Marcondes had a quietly good season for Norwich, I think if anyone went and look back at his stats, they'd probably be surprised at how good they were, because actually, although it felt like at times he wasn't quite on the level of a Scythe or a Sargent, of course, he did actually produce relatively consistent numbers, scored a few decent goals for Norwich and was contributing in that creative area. But I don't think he's one where they're looking at it thinking if they lose him, then it's disastrous. Of course, we know the age profile is a big thing for Ben Napa, and now he's got to balance a 27-year-old Kovacevic, 26-year-old Medic. I think Darling is 25 as well. So although obviously they do want to increase the number of prime players they've got in that squad, if they do want to keep the average age profile quite low, it probably does mean offloading some of those slightly older players. And if a Grêmio, for example, as has been linked with Marcondes in the last few days, comes in and offers to take him off their hands, I don't really see a situation where Norwich are particularly desperate to keep him. So for a few reasons, I think I could see that one being done. I think the level of interest is more the interesting one. I think Norwich do actually expect a bit of interest. There probably have been a few conversations, and obviously we know that Gremio are one of the clubs who have been sort of looking. But for me, it depends a little bit on whether that interest expands, because if Gremio all of a sudden see a better option than Marcondes, then ultimately you're sort of wondering where he does go. So yeah, I think if there is the interest in him, then Norwich would be very open to doing a deal. And from the player's perspective, you can probably understand, given all the events of the last few months, the uncertainty that he's probably feeling at this stage with a year left on his contract. I think it makes sense for him as well. So yeah, I wouldn't be shocked whatsoever to see him depart this summer.
Inevitably though, Connor, if a lot of these attacking players depart, then fans will be wanting Norwich to bring in some additions in those attacking areas. There's a few comments maybe around wingers, Simons, Universal Music saying, who's the next one coming in? We want someone who can get the fans going, buzzing for next season. We've also got Sam saying, I suppose links maybe to Louis Barry and Raksaki in the Championship, both wingers. Danny as well saying any name on wingers. I suppose, can you provide any insight on where Norwich may be looking at, in what markets potentially?
Yeah, I can't provide names yet. I think it's not quite. We're not quite at that stage yet. But yeah, they're working on two, as we understand it. Again, you can go and read Paddy's piece, which maps it out pretty perfect. Do that after this though. Keep listening to our nonsense first, obviously, and then go and read it afterwards. But I will surmise, yeah, they're interested in two. We're expecting one of those to be a loan, likely from the Premier League, but not Lewis Dobbin. I think last we sort of heard on him, he's still rehabbing, still recovering from that calf injury, which is a bit of a concern, really, that we're at the end of June and that is still sort of the state of play with him. I think the hope was that he might even be in with a shout of making the last couple of games of the season initially. So the fact it's now dragged on to this extent isn't great for him. And at some stage, if you're Norwich, you need to move. And I think for me, every day that kind of passes where that Lewis Dobbin interest isn't taken up, and you know, again, as far as I'm aware, there hasn't really been substantial talks on him beyond obviously that club statement insisting that Norwich and Villa remain in talks. I don't think that there's been too much between the player and obviously his camp and Norwich at this stage. And clearly, if that is the state of play, then he's not going to be fit and he's not going to be available, really. So I think it was always kind of mapped out to us that if they could go down a domestic route and maybe find a winger who they could get on loan that maybe had a better loan record. And we all know how much they got stung by that last season. I think Johannes Hoftorup mentioned sort of previous and past Achilles injuries for Dobbin as well, which again, this isn't a related injury to that, but I'm sure they're mindful of that as well. Then I think there probably is other options. Raksaki's a good shout. I hadn't considered that actually. So yeah, that's one. And then I think there'll probably be the other, which we would regard as maybe the science replacement as well, that as Sam mapped out they're working on. So yeah, I think look, there's a world where it could happen pretty quickly, but as always with transfers, they're so fluid, right? They can move quickly, they can end quickly, they can shift quickly. I mean, I'll probably always use this example for the end of time now, but Yildirim last summer, take a look at that. I mean, he was in Norfolk, he was in the process of doing his medical. It got to that stage and it decided that obviously that wasn't one for them. So that is how fluid and quickly they can move constantly, and things can look like they're happening and then they don't. So yeah, but that's the state of play, that they want wingers, they are in the market for wingers, and they are getting closer to wingers. And again, it just backs up the point that I made last night, irrespective of the efficiency of them. That's another debate. And obviously these players are going to come in and have to affect it at Championship level, but the speed and the decisiveness of Norwich City's business so far has been really impressive. And I think it's hard not to be impressed by what they've done in such a short period of time, albeit three of them being goalkeepers and two of them obviously being backup goalkeepers, to still have got that body or that number of bodies through the door. You know, June is usually a bit of a dead month in football, but that hasn't been the case this year for Norwich. And you know, it's been really impressive. So kudos to Ben Napper and obviously the recruitment team in that regard. But obviously no one will remember how quickly they did their business in October if they're, you know, if they haven't won a game and they're struggling towards the bottom of the Championship. So it's all very well and good being quick, but you've also got to be effective with that business as well. And I think what we're seeing probably is some well-worn plans. So yeah, that's the state of play on the wingers. Obviously, any updates on that, we will bring you as and when they are relevant and whatnot. But yeah, that's the state of play as we sit here today. Saints probably looking to be stepped up, and Norwich on the other side looking to working on currently a couple of wingers in the background. So yeah, watch this space, I think. But I think that's all going to probably progress over the weekend / maybe next week in general.
Yes, Connor's mapped that there. Maybe Norwich's pursuit of a couple of wingers. Sam, a few other people in the comments saying, how many more signings do you think we can expect? Obviously, that's maybe hinged a little bit based on who departs. But Aaron saying, where's our business then? Not counting on replacements to outgoings. I suppose what positions, there's another comment as well, sort of maybe relating to central midfield. Is that maybe another area you can see Norwich, I suppose, dipping into between now and the end of the window?
Yes, definitely the plan for them to get another central midfielder to add a little bit of quality to the group in that area of the pitch. So, yeah, I think that's probably one that right now is a little bit on the back burner. I think earlier on in the summer, it was probably one they were a little bit more focused on because it was one they were keen to improve upon, even if they didn't have any outs. And of course, there are players in and around the fringes, particularly in that midfield area where you could say there's some business to be done, and ultimately, obviously, Marcondes has emerged as one of those. So I think central midfield early on was one of their priorities, probably one they'll come back to after the sort of winger search now. But in terms of the numbers that they're looking at, obviously, they want at least a couple of wingers, one to fill the slot that Lewis Dobbin did last season, and one, of course, to replace Borja Sainz. Then if you add a central midfielder to that, it's three. And then beyond that, I don't know if there really are many positions that they would need to be active in unless somebody goes. Of course, you look at the fullback areas. I think they've been happy with their left-back options for a long time, Mahovo and Krizene, and you can't really see either of those moving on. At right back, Kellen Fisher, you'd expect to be starting on a regular basis next season. I don't know if there could be some movement on Jack Stacey. I think he's probably one where Norwich would be perfectly happy to have him in the building next season. But if a good offer came in for him to move on, I don't know if they'd stand in his way. So perhaps that's one that they could look at later on in the window if something did happen. And then obviously, beyond that, you're looking at Sargent and if he moves on and replacing him. So aside from exits, I'd be surprised if it was many more than sort of three or four. And that includes the two wingers. But then obviously, as you said, it depends what happens and who comes and goes. And of course, there can always be sort of bids for players and surprise offers that you don't really expect. So yeah, I think there's always room for manoeuvre in the transfer market. As Connor said, you're never completely certain. But I think centre mid is one they'll look at, even if there aren't any further departures. And then we know they need two more wingers. So yeah, I'd say at least three or four between now and the end of the window.
Yeah, that central midfield position is interesting. As Kieran sort of maps out here, the central midfield search will probably be accelerated if Marcondes goes, because I think it's nine midfielders currently on the books, if I'm correct. Andy as well saying, any news on the midfielder? Faith as well, any news on the midfielder? OJ maybe been a little bit optimistic with Ollie Skip at Leicester, but I don't think he's playing a lot.
Let him go, folks. Let him go. He's gone.
But I suppose, can you maybe sort of provide, or maybe a type of midfielder that Norwich might want, Connor, or sort of any names currently in the frame, obviously, that we've sort of, I suppose, given the likes of Matos and Moran, maybe not active targets, but that maybe sort of gives you a little bit of an idea of the profile of type of midfielder that they're looking at.
Yeah, I think it'll be a more defensively minded one. So I probably would view the Marcondes situation as being removed from that. I think we're probably talking a six type. That for me feels probably like where we're at with them. And I think probably with that position and obviously the permanent winger, I could see. Doesn't mean they will be, but I could see Norwich probably dedicating a bit more finance and resource to those positions, maybe than what we've seen so far with Medic and Kovacevic. I think there's maybe I can't speak for you, gents, but I probably expected them to go and spend a little bit more on a goalkeeper than they have. Doesn't mean that they've done well ultimately to recruit a goalkeeper of the quality that they have without maybe needing to spend that much. But I think it probably then allows you maybe to shuffle things in a slightly different direction where you can maybe target a couple of those of that midfield and winger position. And of course, as well, you have to be mindful of PSR, which is very real and very prominent around that. So that is why when we talk about Sainz and when we talk about Sargent, those sales, for example, could be very useful in terms of allowing Norwich to do some incoming stuff, but also allowing them to finance that in a slightly bigger way than perhaps they've done previously. So again, you know, we've spoken so much about GBE slots and ESC slots, or PSR is something that you have to juggle as well on top of that. There's so much that has to go into it. And this is why it's all so complex and so fluid, because you can, you know, gone are the days where you can go, I like that player, I'm going to sign him. Well, actually, it's I like that player. Okay, does he fit within our context of, do we need to give him an ESC slot? Does he fit? Does he qualify him on those? Great, he does. What are the finances involved? We can't do that because our PSR is X. So all of this has to be juggled up, which is why it's so complex. But yeah, I think it will be probably a more standalone defensive midfielder. And then within that, as you say, it's going to be really interesting to kind of see the churn within that. I personally would have liked to have seen them go down, and look, they might do. I felt they probably needed a little bit more creativity in midfield and a bit more connection between some of those sort of deeper phases of possession that they had compared to what they had. I think they probably need a bit more athleticism in there as well. I know Jacob Wright kind of played in that holding role, but I probably like to see him alongside someone else, because I felt there were times where his kind of rest defence and his positioning wasn't great, and that led to kind of transitional moments, as good as he was in other areas. And look, the lad's 19, so he's going to get better in those aspects. But if we're talking about maybe a bit more of a proven head alongside him, someone maybe of a similar age category to where Medica is and Kovacevic is, maybe sort of 24, 25, I think that could be really interesting. And then, yeah, I mean, Marcondes, as we said, I think if your agent is putting quotes out there in Brazil saying you're interested in going to Brazil, that feels pretty likely to me in terms of how that ends up. I think Anis Ben Slimani is a really interesting one as well. Someone that Norwich signed in January, probably didn't perform the best. I think there's potential in there with really good preseason. He didn't have that last season. I think he showed bursts of the player that he could be. But is he one that Liam Manning views? Again, Emmanuel Forsen, Oscar Schwartel, still very young. Can they come and impact it? Liam Gibbs probably needs to get out and play some football, in my view. So if that's not at Norwich, it probably needs to be on loan elsewhere. There's so many moving parts. Obviously, we're not even mentioning Kenny McLean as well in that. So I think it's a really interesting department, and obviously Norwich have got bodies there, but I think, as Sam said, it's probably maybe now about injecting a bit more ready-made quality into there as well, because there were points where that midfield looked really good. There were points where it didn't last season. Nunez as well, I still think there's a possibility that maybe there's some level of interest in him that obviously hasn't materialised yet. It's been very quiet around him. So yeah, it's very fluid. And as Sam said, I think anything they did, I think it would basically be one, and then anything else they did would be contingent on kind of outgoing. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what sort of profile they go for in terms of maybe who that midfield option is. But as Sam rightly says, it feels like probably the wingers are where their head is at the moment. And that makes sense, I think, given the amount of bodies they have, because they've got essentially Science, Jurasek. Help me out if I'm missing anyone else, lads. Obviously, Antti Sinnats can play there, but then you're dropping down to Elliot Miles. So we're talking really about two senior wingers in the building, and one of those we're probably expecting to depart. So they need another couple for sure.
They do, yeah. We'll spend the last 15 minutes or so dipping into some of these comments and sort of answering as many as we can. NCFC 1902 saying, I'd love another striker, even if Sarge stays, maybe a wide player who can play up top would fulfil the need. Two, I suppose, is that maybe something Norwich might consider, Sam, when they're signing wingers? I know they had that link to, was Adriano Bertaccini, I think, the Belgian winger who can technically play both. Antti Sinnats is maybe a good example of that as well. So is that something Norwich might consider, I suppose?
Yeah, I think if they had better numbers, then probably. But as Connor outlined, you know, once Scythe goes, they'll have one real dedicated winger in the building. Really, aside from Elliot Miles. So probably I'd say no at this stage. I think it could even be a situation where they sign those two wingers and then they look at potentially a sort of winger who can play up front. I think at this stage, they'll probably want to just boost the numbers of pure wingers right now, because if you put your stock in somebody who can play out wide and up front, let's say Josh Sargent goes and they say, okay, they need wingers and a striker, and they get somebody who can play both, and then they get injured, then they're down to sort of two or three options to fill the wide positions, and they've got one option up front. So I think the fact that they've got Sinnats, who can already do that, as you said, Adam, probably means that they'll go for more dedicated players in those positions right now. But I probably could see a situation where they add a couple of wingers, Science goes, and then it's just sort of three three senior wingers plus Elliot Miles, and they've only got Ante Siannats and Josh Sargent potentially leaving up front. And then they might look at the situation depending on how the first few weeks of the season pan out and say, you know, can they potentially get an option who can cover both of those positions? But I think right now, the numbers are so short that they really need to fill it with bodies who are dedicated to those positions first, and then maybe look at that type of thing later. Obviously, the efficiencies of those savings will always be welcome at every football club, but I think they'll look at some of the injury problems they had last season, how they were exposed by those, and they'll want to make sure they've definitely got the quantity as well as the quality this summer. So that's probably one to keep an eye on for later in the window, I'd say.
Yeah, you mentioned Kenny McLean. Matt saying, how realistic would Kenny leaving be? And if he did, who takes over as captain? He said, I personally feel we start planning this team without Kenny being an automatic starter, his age and performances being the reason for this. I get sentimental, but it's about prime time. I suppose Jacob Wright is maybe a good example of someone who, you know, could try and take over that mantle, I suppose, in the midfield. So Kenny's position is quite interesting, I suppose, moving into this summer, Connor.
Yeah, it is. And the honest answer is I don't know in terms of where he's at this summer. It's a really, really interesting one. He's been fantastic for Norwich over his time, for what they paid for him, for what he's given back to them. And, you know, really good captain, really valuable in the dressing room as well. So, you know, there is clearly a very important role that he has to play. It's about probably whether that comes with if that scenario that Matt has mapped out there, you know, comes to fruition. Does he want to, at this stage of his career, sit in the background and be that kind of positive influence? Because it can be hard for some players maybe to do that when clearly they want to play. You know, I've drawn parallels a little bit with obviously what happened with Grant Hanley and Ashley Barnes as well, probably to a lesser extent, Christian Fashanet, where feels to me maybe one that you could see in January. I think it feels quite difficult at this stage for clubs to come in and offer kind of 2-year contracts. You know, 18 months in January is a bit easier to do, to take on. It gives the player a bit more security, and obviously their sort of career comes into focus as well in that regard. So yeah, I don't know. I could kind of see both scenarios. Would it surprise me if Kenny came in and Liam Manning was super impressed with him and he played 46 games next season? No, that probably wouldn't surprise me, given how highly rated he's been by basically every other Norwich head coach that he's worked under. Would it surprise me if he played 20 games and, you know, 10 of those as a substitute and maybe sorted something out for himself in January? That probably also wouldn't surprise me in truth. Because, you know, again, you look at the last 2 years, you know, the year before he was player of the season and was exceptional, ever present in that David Wagner team, such a prominent figure and enabled a lot of Gabriel Sara and obviously Marcelino Nunez to do what they do, played as a centre-back, played as a left-back as well. Last year probably was less prominent because of suspension, because of injury and illness and all of those type of things as well, and probably didn't play maybe by his own admission as well as he could do. So I think it's a really interesting one. I think it's going to be interesting to see how Norwich navigate and manage that, because he's clearly got a big role. And I think what I would say as well is, with 9 substitutes, there's probably, you can play a lot more without being as prominent, I would say. So maybe that can be a consideration as well. Clearly, he has a lot of affection and feeling for the football club, its fans, the people. And he's got 12 months left. So irrespective of what happens, if this is, as I would probably expect, his last year at Norwich City, when it does come to an end, if it's this summer, if it's January, if it's hopefully next summer after a really successful championship campaign, you know, that he maybe gets a send-off that perhaps Grant Hanley didn't get, that maybe he warranted. So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting one, him and Shane Duffy, to be fair. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it evolves and adapts, I think, over the coming months. There's still not been a link to Rangers, though. So even though it's 30 degrees, not quite summer yet.
Indeed, yeah. A few people mentioning maybe other senior players in the camp. James saying Norwich actively trying to move on older players. Shane Duffy is someone who's come up a few times. What's Duffy's situation now? I also saw, I think, OJ as well, actually, with assigning 4 goalkeepers. How are we going to get rid of Long? Surely not many clubs will be interested with his stats. So a few senior players there, Duffy, Long. I suppose, how do you see that playing out over the course of the summer, Sam?
Yes, it's an interesting one. I mean, it's obviously both players are players who Norwich are very open to moving on. That's been the case for a little while. And I think the writing was on the wall when George Long fell behind Vicente Reyes in the pecking order last season. And obviously now, yeah, as outlined in that comment, he's so far down the pecking order with the number of play, with the number of players they've brought in that position. If you put Reyes ahead of him, he's now fifth choice. So I think it's in everyone's interest for him to get a move. But yeah, I mean, the problem is that you don't know which clubs are going to come in for him. I don't think there are too many scouts out there who will have watched his championship performances for Norwich and said, you know, there's a solid keeper they want to put their trust in and you know, recommend to a manager or a sporting director to come and bring in. So maybe at a lower level, that's more realistic. I think probably if you'd asked me a few years ago, I'd have said that he was ripe for a sort of mutual termination, because particularly in the Stuart Webber era, that was something they obviously used quite often when they had players who they didn't really see playing a major role with years left on their contract. I think we saw that with a few players that sort of the player and the club would come to terms on their release, with obviously a financial cost involved in that. So I think if Ben Napper can avoid that, then he probably will. And I don't think it's been a solution he's turned to even once yet since he came to Norwich with a senior player. So if he did do that, it would be a first. But ultimately, it's hard to see really another situation where that happens. George Long has, I think, another 2 years on his contract at a championship club. So it comes down to whether a club, you know, is a club lower down the championship or maybe even in League One going to offer to, first of all, pay him as much as he's receiving at Norwich, and secondly, take him on for at least 2 years, if not longer. And that's where the problem comes in, really. So for me, for both him and for the club, probably a mutual termination would be the best solution. But I wouldn't want to commit to saying that's what's going to happen, because Napper actually hasn't really used that as a tactic as a sporting director so far. So it would mean a departure from what he's done previously, but it probably would be a cheaper decision to make than maybe it would be for Shane Duffy, for example, who I think, yeah, is another one in that bracket. I don't think he is as on the fringes as probably Long is at this stage. I think if it ended up with Shane Duffy having to start 10 games next season, I don't think Liam Manning or anyone else at the club would be particularly heartbroken, but they definitely are open to offers. And if a club does come along and take his contract on, then that's something they'd definitely be interested in. Obviously, nobody's done that yet. Otherwise, he would have completed a transfer. But yeah, definitely something they're open to, probably something that he's open to as well. And that feeling will have increased over the last few weeks when they've signed Harry Darling, they've signed Jakub Medic as well. And that is a statement for players who are already at the club as much as it is for anyone else. So, yeah, I don't think in the perfect world either of those players would be at Norwich at the end of the transfer window. But, of course, for financial reasons, it's not quite as simple as you don't want them, get rid of them, because they've got, yeah, a year left on the contract for Duffy and 2 years left for George Long. So it's a bit of a complicated one for Ben Napper to deal with, really.
Yeah, let's rattle quickly through a few more of these comments. Mark saying, Pocky a target from Peterborough. Apparently, three clubs have agreed a deal. One club hasn't been named. I think Queen's Park Rangers seemingly are the front runners at the moment, by all accounts, if you go by what the reports are saying. Joachim on YouTube saying, rumours on players from South America. Have Norwich still got connections there? I suppose you may be surprised that there's not been any rumours from that area. I know Johannes Ovtorup actually did reference that would be a market that maybe Norwich would still look at this summer. And given their recruitment kind of is more tailored towards, you know, the club and sort of rather than a specific head coach, is, are you maybe surprised we've not seen any more links from there, Connor?
Yes and no. I think yes, they still do have connections there. They have two scouts on the ground over there. Still a very good market, but it's an expensive market at times, and it's complicated as well, because you kind of get players maybe that are partly owned by agents, and deals can become quite difficult. So probably has to be the right player. I think you can see the top clubs now going into sort of Venezuela and Bolivia and Peru. There are some really good markets in there. Clearly, Norwich found that with Marcelino Nunez in Chile and Gabriel Sara as well. But you look at the kind of level of both of those deals for what they were at the time, quite expensive. Obviously, Norwich made that up with Gabriel Sara, but at the time that was kind of that's quite a big amount of money for a player who's kind of only played in Brazil. And obviously Nunez as well. I think they'll do well to get that 3.5 million, whatever it was, back at this stage with 12 months left on his deal, unless obviously he signs a new contract and kicks on, which isn't beyond the realm. So, yeah, it's a difficult market, I would say. I think also clearly that they look everywhere is what I would say. Again, go back to that Lee Dunn chat you had with Paddy. He spoke about a player that he'd scouted and been out to South Korea to watch. So, I think they are looking. Has to be the right player, has to be the right context, has to be the right moment. And I think probably the level of player, the quality of player that they would like might actually be a Premier League promotion or being a bit closer to that top of the Championship, where some of that stuff would be applied to them. But, you know, equally, they are, as I said, very tough deals to do. So there was a link to Brazilians at winger fullback earlier in the window. So, yeah, they're still active, still watching players. I could see maybe a little bit more at the development level than perhaps first team level at this stage. But yeah, there's not currently, I don't think, any names beyond Emi Marcondes and Norwich City doing the rounds in South America at the moment.
Indeed, yeah. You'll have to ask Paddy on this one, Rob. We'd have to you know, ask him personally for an update on that situation. But yes, Johannes obviously still looking for work. So you know, maybe there's still some contact between those two. But that's one to ask Paddy, not us. Simon's Universe of Music saying, when's the kit out? Because I'm in Norwich next Friday. Faith as well saying, new kit release soon. I mean, given that pre-season kicks off in a couple of weeks at Colney, I'd imagine it's going to be pretty soon, Sam.
Yeah, so the first game's 12th of July, isn't it? And I think it will probably be just a little bit before that. So although I don't know the exact date, what date is next Friday? That's the 4th of July. So although I don't know the exact date, I'd be surprised if it's miles and miles away. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that one. But yeah, definitely, obviously they'll have to have it before the 12th of July. And yeah, I think the plan is for it to be relatively soon. I did see the club were engaging on X with fans asking when it would be out. So that's probably usually a good sign that it won't be too long. But yeah, we'll see. I think, who was it that said they were in Norwich on Friday?
Simon
probably won't be miles off, although I genuinely don't know the exact date. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that one. But I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm sure Connor will inform everyone, as he did last week, of the exact colours that it's expected to be, but that's his information, so I don't want to take it off him.
Yellow and green,
yeah, it is. But we haven't seen it yet. No, I think that these things are very top secret. If you go by with that Harry Darling insight video, you know, making sure nobody was about. So no, we've not had the pleasure of seeing it yet. BCB Clex on YouTube saying, boys, one for you all. Can we get some clarity on Eurosec? It's beyond silly from NCFC at this point. Is he even going to be fit from the start of the season? I think he's had a little bit of surgery over the summer, Connor.
Yes, he has. Yeah, which again is, I would suggest, is probably a good thing. Good timing for to have that done. I think the feeling was that it was minor and he would be back for pre-season, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong in that. So he will be one of the players that is back on Monday and he's expected to train. So unless he picks up anything else subsequently, the hope is, yeah, that he'll very much be back for the start of the season.
Yes, I also saw a comment from Russ saying, do you think Cordoba will come good this season? Is he the right man for the job? Given they've done a lot of additions in that centre-back area and, you know, he's had now one season in England, a pretty positive performance for Panama the other night after some, you know, tough appearances of late. Is he one, I suppose, that you expect to kick on next season, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, the conventional wisdom going from what I've seen is that probably people aren't too huge fans of Jose Cordoba at the moment, but I do genuinely believe that he could be a big player for Norwich next season. I think he's shown at times that he's got that physical quality that he can quite easily sort of lever strikers off the ball. He's got a bit of pace as well, which means he can be part of a high line. And if you take Ben Napper's quotes on Kovacevic and how important his style of play is, that suggests that Norwich do want to press high, that they want to have that sort of proactive back line. And I think Cordoba can work really well in that. In possession, I don't think he's anything incredible. I don't think he's Callum Doyle levels of progressive passing, but I think he's certainly adequate technically. But what's clear to me at the moment, or at least up until that latest Panama performance, because that might have changed things, is that he is extremely low on confidence. And I'd say if Liam Manning wants to get the best out of him, then that's probably one of the first tasks for him, is to try and put a little bit of confidence back into Cordoba and sort of exposed the player that I think we all saw in the first couple of months of his time at Norwich, because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he's got those physical attributes. We've all seen the way that he can play when the team around him is doing well. And of course, you could say that that's easy when you're dominating possession, when everyone else around you has confidence, it's easy to look a pretty good defender. But even in one-on-one situations, I think early on in the season, he was looking really good. But he then obviously had that incident before Watford, where he was late to a team meeting and ended up missing that game. That gave others an opportunity to come in and sort of keep him out of the team. He had a few injuries throughout the season as well. And when you look at the way that the team declined and results declined over the season also, it's certainly not conducive to a player who arrived last summer really building their confidence as the season goes on. Of course, he didn't really have a proper pre-season either because of those injury issues. So I think there was a lot of mitigation. Admittedly, his performances recently for both his club and country haven't been particularly good. But I do think he's got the raw talent. And for me, it's now down to Manning to primarily give him a bit of confidence just to get him back to that base level of what we've seen in yellow and green before, and then to try to sort of extract as much as he possibly can. Because, yeah, I think my feeling, and probably that of a lot of people behind the scenes at Colney as well, is that he does have that raw material and he could still come good as a top Norwich City defender.
Can I just jump in there, Adam? Sorry, just to agree with Sam, but to reinforce that point, I thought it was quite noticeable actually after that really high profile incident with Panama in the Nations League. I can't remember what month it was, but I've got in my head around February, March time, in the final with the handball and the criticism that came. I didn't think it was a coincidence that from that incident happening, you saw a real drop off in terms of his form and what he was kind of about. And you know, I think Andy commented earlier, the level of importance and significance that Norwich City system under Johannes Hovtorup placed on centre-backs last season. If you're in that role and you're unsure or you're not confident, it can be really lonely and it can be really sort of error ridden because of how much they're on the ball and the decision making that they made. So, yeah, it's about trying to achieve a bit more of that consistency. And who knows, you know, we spoke so much over the summer about a back four and a back three. I personally think it will be a back four, but I could certainly see the argument where he probably would be at this stage because of those confidence issues that we mentioned. I think with a Manning side that's probably going to be a little bit less dogmatic in terms of where the ball is as well. I think there probably is an argument that he could look quite good quite quickly in a back three. And yeah, it's obviously going to be interesting to see how that evolves. But I think he is still very much part of the plans. I think he's still very, very prominent on that left side. Whether he's a starting choice or not, I think we'll have to see. But I think there probably is a little bit of a rebuilding mission in terms of his confidence there.
And just to round off the show, quite a few comments maybe around pre-season. That kicks off obviously in a couple of weeks' time. Bonnet pretty keen to see Paddy with shades on, waving, shouting Ajax and greeting locals. He also asked if Paddy can do pink and tours with a Steve McLaren Dutch accent. That's one to push towards Paddy rather than us. Matt saying, hope to see you guys in the Netherlands. Will there be pink and content? And Faith asking, great pod. Will there be an open training session in Holland? I mean, they tend to do these open training sessions on tours, Connor, and given they're only in Holland this time rather than three or four places, that probably feels like it will happen.
Yeah, they did one, was it a couple of years ago in Germany? I remember being in Darmstadt, yeah. And they did an open session then. That was David Wagner, wasn't it? So yeah, I think the fact that they're probably situated in one place for a little bit longer probably lends itself to that. I don't know is the honest answer. That hasn't been confirmed. We can obviously ask the question and try and find out. But yeah, look, if Matt and other people want the vlogs, I'm sure we can produce them. There's going to be, obviously, as now confirmed, four games over there. It's going to be a bit of a logistical challenge, but we'll do our best to make it work. And yeah, it's going to be a really intriguing trip, I think, in terms of seeing how that progression under Liam Manning is going. And technically, that sort of first game, I think that obviously the main one will be in Belgium. But there's clearly a game before that as well against Volendam. That's going to be the first kind of public sighting that we have of a Liam Manning Norwich City team. And then clearly obviously come back and play two games against Breda, obviously one behind closed doors at Colney and then one at Carrow Road. So feels like quite a short and sweet pre-season this year. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out.
Yep, I think with that, we're going to round off the show this lunchtime. Hopefully, we've answered as many of the comments and questions as we could over the course of the last hour or so. Thanks for joining us. As always, plenty of good content coming your way across the Pinken channels. There's going to be an interview with a certain former Norwich City player who's got a book coming out over the course of the weekend that Connor's done. Hopefully, we'll have some more insight on Kovacevic at some point as well over the next week or two. I think we'll probably try and plan to do a proper sit-down Pinken pod, the first one of the summer, maybe looking at some of the signings in a bit more depth and sort of looking ahead to pre-season and the season ahead. So definitely keep it locked to the Pinken YouTube channel. Of course, got the app as well, which $2.99 a month. You get access to all the newsletters, the Q&As, all the exclusive columnists, plenty of good stuff coming your way into the new season as well over there. So with all that, we're going to sign off. Enjoy your weekend and we'll see you in the next one of these, which I'm sure, given the rate of the transfer window so far, won't be too long away.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.